Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 240 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. Jumping right back into it. Fight reviews this past Saturday, the 15th of July, from the Virtu Motors Arena in Newcastle on DAZN. Josh Kelly, 14-1-1, gets the unanimous decision win over 12 rounds against Gabriel Alberto Corso, who takes the first loss of his career. And this was for the WBO International Super Welterweight title. What did you think about Josh Kelly's decision win?
I mean, it was flashy at times, but it got to the point where you just kind of realized, you're like, okay, like Corso has come here to try to survive. And Kelly just didn't have the power to get him out of there. You know, I thought Kelly should have maybe have just jumped on him a little bit more and, you know, maybe not have the power to knock him out, but, you know, get to the point where you're throwing that many punches where the referee's like, hey, and just jumps in and kind of stops it. But, you know, it's good to get Kelly back, you know, into the win column. The crowd looked like it was okay. You know, maybe they need to move him to his hometown up in Sunderland. It didn't look like it was, you know, like a sold out arena for him. But, you know, there's some big local fights for him to do. I know that he called out afterwards, I think it was Chris Eubank Jr. and Conor Benn. And then, you know, he may get a chance. Obviously, he's, you know, he's highly ranked with the WBO. Jamal Charlo is stepping up to face Canelo. Is he going to stay at 168? Is Charlo going to drop down maybe to 160? So he could be, you know, first in line for a shot at the you know, the full title, the WBO, if Charlo steps up and, you know, decides to relinquish one of those titles at 154.
I think that Charlo, after the Canelo fight, unless Charlo wins, see, that's, I would love to know what Al Haymon is thinking for something like this. It's like, okay, you got your guy, Charlo, who has essentially all the belts at 154. He's going up two weight classes to fight, arguably the best fighter in the world, top three or whatever, who has all the titles at 168. If Charlo loses, obviously he still has all his titles at 154. So he'll probably go back down and defend those there to, you know, because I don't think Al Haymon and Showtime would want to relinquish all those titles from their guy. You know, they have a lot of power with not just their guys having all the belts, but one guy having all the belts. That's a lot of power. But if Charlo ends up getting the upset over Canelo Alvarez and now holds all the titles in two weight classes, you know, is he going to go back and forth? I mean, I think even if Charlo loses to Canelo, he's going to get a lot of offers from a lot of the guys between 160 and 168, even Bivol and, you know, stuff like that, Benavidez, because they're like, oh, okay, well, you came up to our weight class, you know, and they're going to look at him as a money fighter and all that. But I mean, didn't the WBC already come out or they did it for Fury? I don't know if they said anything for Charlo. They might have, but I mean, both Charlos have had belts for like 2 years or something and they haven't been stripped. But I mean, we know how it works. It's the business of boxing. Like the sanctioning bodies know, hey, it's easier for us to just wait it out with these guys who are all inactive for one reason or another because their paydays are so much higher than all these other fighters, that it's worth it for us to just wait it out. It's like a long-term investment for them to wait for their cut of the sanctioning fee. So that's what it is. It's not like, oh yeah, we're just giving this person a chance. No, it comes down to the dollar. That's what it is. And somebody like Josh Kelly, he's, you know, it's going to be like at least hit, like maybe a year, maybe more, probably more. Josh Kelly's not really the name that you think of when you think of like, oh, he's going to go to PBC or he's going to get a shot at the PBC fighter, Jermell Charlo or something like that. He would have to go to Showtime and PBC and DAZN, Matchroom would have to let him. And, you know, Al Heyman and Showtime are really don't get along with Eddie Hearn. I just don't see, unless Charlo relinquishes all these belts, or, you know, I can't even say, even if Charlo loses them, he's going to end up finding somebody within the PBC stable, just like any promotional body would likely do. And he would just lose that belt to somebody else, like a Tony Harrison, a Brian Castagno, and all that. So it just stays within the circle. Like, I mean, it's boxing politics, right? It's going to be difficult for Josh Kelly to get a shot at any one of these major world titles at 154 for a long time. He's probably just going to have to move up and probably have better luck at 160, right? What do you think?
I was just thinking about it as you were saying, like, if he moves up and then he's in the same weight category as his brother, right? You know, do they really want to try to share those belts? But I mean, the Klitschkos did, you know, one of them held one, the other one held the rest. So, you know, he could do that. It's going to be interesting just because, you know, we've seen it with obviously Roy Jones Jr. You know, once you fill out and, you know, he moves up to 168 and maybe adds a little bit of muscle here and there, is he going to be able to, you know, come back down to, you know, 154? So it's going to be interesting. And, you know, like you touched on, what's Al Heyman got in his plans for those three fights against Canelo? Is he going to do Charlo, Benavidez, and then the other Charlo? You know, are we going to see Benavidez, Charlo, Spence? So it's going to be interesting over the next 18 months or so to see which three of the PBC crew get the, you know, get the payday, get the red panty night, you know, like Conor McGregor says, gets the payday against Canelo. So yeah, interesting times at the PBC.
There's also a chance that, I don't even think a chance. I think it's a guarantee. I mean, with somebody like Canelo being as experienced as he is, not only at the on the fighting side, but the business side of the sport. Even if Charlo beats him, gets the upset, and gets all his titles at 168, you don't think Canelo has in his agreement with Al Heyman that, like, hey, if your guy beats me, I get an automatic rematch. You don't think, I mean, I guarantee you it's like that for all of them. Like, all these three fights, if he loses one of them and he loses his titles, I guarantee you Canelo has a rematch clause, like, where he's like, yeah, he's like, no. He's like, if I lose to any of these, one of these three fights on your guys, I get an automatic rematch clause, because he wants to go get his titles back. So if Charlo ends up, you know, getting the upset, does that rematch count as one of the three fight deals? And we're just speculating here, but I mean, do you think it does?
That's one for the legal, isn't it? It's kind of like similar to the Okoli.
I think it just depends on the language in the contract, you know?
Yeah, that's what Okoli's said with Eddie Hearn, right? When one of the big name people in the contract dropped out, they had like a filler fight. And then Eddie Hearn was saying, well, yeah, that was an extra fight. That wasn't part of the contract because that wasn't one of the people in, you know, one of the main fights. And then Okoli was like, no, that's one of the, that classes is one of them. So like you said, it's down to the language, I guess, you know, in the contracts.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting, but I'm sure, I'm going to say 100%. I'm 100% sure Canelo has that in his agreement with Al Heyman. Like, hey, if one of your guys beats me, for example, like this first PBC fight with Charlo, Canelo has an automatic rematch clause. There's no way. You know, he obviously has the power. So, yeah, that's definitely interesting. But, yeah, about Josh Kelly, you know, he's a good fighter. You know, been around a while, but he's not going to get a shot. He's not going to get a shot because all the titles are at PBC. It's just not going to work out. He's going to have to move up to 160 and try to figure something out there. Triple G still has titles, right? Or has a title at 160. I mean, yeah, Josh Kelly's never. I just don't see him getting a shot at 154 with all the titles being at PBC. So, yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's the nature of the game that we keep talking about here on a weekly basis. Also, this past weekend from the Masonic, how would you say it?
Masonic, I think.
Masonic Temple from Detroit, Michigan on DAZN. Alicia Baumgartner gets the 15th win of her career over Christina Lindarto with the 10-round unanimous decision win. Bumgarner retains her undisputed super featherweight championship titles of the world by scores of 99-91, 98-92 twice. What do you think about Bumgarner's performance?
One of my favorite, you know, female boxers. I thought she was patient, methodical, countered a lot, and then kind of jumped in with some powerful combinations as well. Especially to the body, I thought she did really, really well. I thought the scorecards were a little bit flattering. You know, 99-91, I thought Lindarto probably did a little bit better than that. But it's just, unfortunately, the same thing. You know, the same thing I kind of complain about every time we talk about the female fights. It's just no knockdowns again. The rounds are too short. And, you know, you don't really get TKOs. You don't really get, like, any KOs. You know, I thought Lindarto did amazing to say that she just had a baby a year ago, and then she came back and she's fighting for the undisputed super featherweight world titles. Good performance from her. And I'm hoping that Eddie Hearn, you know, after what he said afterwards, you know, Katie Taylor's going to be busy facing Chantel Cameron. So hopefully we can see Alicia Bumgarner in there with Amanda Serrano. You know, give me.
I think that's a very intriguing fight, you know, and it's, and we don't have, like we talked about, we don't have that many intriguing fights, let alone one. In female boxing, but I'm very intrigued about this fight, Bumgarner and Serrano, especially after Serrano fighting Taylor, where it elevated her profile, her being associated with Jake Paul. It definitely adds a lot more interest into the matchup. But I honestly think, and so, you know, and Serrano has to get the credit, because I mean, she's what, champion in 8 different weight classes, and you know, you have to give her a ton of credit for that, regardless of her being in a limited class of female fighters. You know, she's trying to make the most of it, but like, okay, I'm just going to move up and down 8 weight classes to try to make some fights, you know. She's trying to be optimistic and trying to create opportunities for herself. You got to give her a ton of credit for that. But I honestly, I'd probably pick Bumgarner in a potential matchup. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think just a little bit fresher. And I think she's getting better and better all the time. I think Toni Harrison seems to have some of the combinations that she does. She seems super confident as well. Like, she just bides the time, kind of, and makes you box in the way that she wants. You know, she'll make you kind of make you throw something so she can counter strike, and then obviously goes to the body, you know, really well. Some of the combinations she's putting together, really good, really crisp, great to watch. Just need more knockouts and, more knockouts and more knockdowns.
And also on the card, the co-main event, probably the most anticipated fight of the weekend. I think we touched on it last week, and we were talking about the interest that a lot of people had on it. And we also had a ton of interest in it too. In his professional debut, since having, I don't even know how many amateur fights as a Cuban amateur, but it was a ton. Andy Cruz gets the first professional win of his career with a 10-round unanimous decision win. That's right, 10 rounds in his first professional fight over Juan Carlos Burgos, who gets the 8th loss of his career. He is now 35-8-3. Cruz wins by scores of 100-90 twice and 98-92. This was for the IBF International Lightweight title. Straight into it. Like we touched on it last week, Lomachenko-esque, you know, the pedigree that he had in his amateur career. Throws him right into the fire. What'd you think about Cruz's performance?
I thought it was really good. You know, you could see that he came down. He was confident. There was no jitters or anything like that, you know, turning professional. I thought he was looking very, very sharp. He did do a few things very similar to Lomachenko, where he kind of like, he'll deliberately drop his guard to make you throw to that side. And then he'll, you know, he'll counter. You know, he's setting stuff up for you to throw. That's how crazy good he is. You know, he drops stuff, does certain things to make you throw punches. But he set it up for you to throw, and then he counters. And he was super quick, and you could see, I think they even did, they translated in the corner where Burgess was told his corner team, like he's just too quick. And, you know, that made Burgess, you know, throw less and less and less, because every time he threw, he was just countered. So obviously, if you're throwing and then you're getting punched in your face, you're probably not going to throw, right? You know, and that's kind of like what happened. But yeah, he kind of just cruised it, to be honest with you, which is kind of weird, right? Since his last name is Cruz.
Pun intended.
right? So he just, I would have liked to have seen him, you know, maybe in the last couple of rounds, kind of jump at him a little more, maybe just get him out of there just with a load of flurries. But, you know, as we tweeted on the night, Burgess has never, ever been stopped. So he's got a good chin, knows how to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm impressed, man. Like you said, I think everybody always wants to see knockouts and stoppages or knockdowns. You know, I understand that, but, you know, the hype behind any fighter, but specifically obviously focusing on Andy Cruz here, of coming out of the amateur program with so many fights, so many victories in the amateur program, and jumping right into the fire into a 10 round. Because, I mean, let's just quickly touch on, like, okay, you come in as a professional after having, you know, 100 amateur fights, 50, 150, or whatever. You start off in the first fight. So, for example, let's talk about another matchroom fighter that they signed a couple of years ago that we were there when the initial conversation was had in Arizona, Mark Castro. Mark Castro is what now? 7-0? 8-0?
Something like that. Yeah.
Just about? I mean, his first fight started off, what, maybe six rounds, something like that? You know, the progression in the first 10 fights is always, okay, you start like a four-rounder, and then you move to like six, and then eight, and then when do you usually hit 10? What do you think?
You're looking at double figures, right? Obviously, it just depends on the pedigree, which is obviously what you're talking about, you know? If you're clinical and you're knocking all the dudes out in the four rounders pretty early, then, you know, you move up the progression as fast. You want to try and do it as fast as you can, right? It just obviously just depends on if you're ready, you know, what type of amateur career you've had.
No, right. But I mean, within those 10 fights, you think they, from what we've seen over the years, do fighters typically go into their first 10 rounder, maybe in their eighth, ninth professional fight, 10th professional fight? Do they do the first 10 and the 11th is a 10 rounder? Like if we had to just guess.
Yeah, I would say after 10.
Right. So saying that and now seeing this past week with Andy Cruz having his first 10 rounder in his first professional fight, let's just say he keeps winning. Do you think by 5-0 or by his fifth fight, he gets a world title shot? Or what do you think?
The problem is it's in the lightweight. You know, I can see him out. They're obviously talking about him fighting Keyshawn Davis. And the problem he has at the minute is all the titles are with one person. You know, it's not going to be that easy to try and find someone and offer them a load of money to be able to try and to pick one up. They're all in one place. So, you know, they're going to have to...
Well, yeah, but Haney's going to move up. Haney's going to move up soon.
If he moves up, you know, then hopefully he does the right thing and relinquishes them. You know, is he just going to tell them, like, hey, I'm moving up for just one fight, just so he can keep his name on all the titles at 135? And like you said...
By the way, Haney just got arrested, too, in Hollywood.
Right.
So I don't think it was... There was a car registered to him that they got pulled over for, and there was a gun in there, but the car was registered to him. So I don't know if the gun was, well, the weapon was his, but I don't know. So we'll see how that plays out. But that was unfortunate to hear. It's like, man, but you know, the sport game, especially in fighting, but yeah, you got to look at it. Haney's a free agent, essentially. I mean, I don't think I want to say essentially. I think he is. I think he's already confirmed it. You know, he has no current deal, at least announced or reported. And he has all the belts. So there's no, unless he signs a long-term deal with somebody, there's no promoter incentive to hold him back to keep those belts in-house somewhere. So even if he wanted to relinquish them, he could, and he can move to 140 and get a title shot right away because of his status at 135. So, I mean, I just don't... I mean, what do you think? Like, for somebody like Andy Cruz, I think with somebody like Haney having all the titles and Haney not having any affiliation, current affiliation or long-term affiliation with any promoter right now, I think for all the lightweights right now, all the other ones besides Devin Haney, that's great news. That's great news, right? Because it's great news for somebody like Ryan Garcia, even Tank Davis and all those guys, because Haney has no ties to anybody. So there's a chance, who knows how much of a chance, but there's a chance that he could relinquish all the titles and then they're up for grabs. And then all these promoters are like ants going after them. Like, oh, no, we need this. We need that. We need this. We need that. There's a good chance that happens. And all the titles, WBA goes to PBC. IBF kind of goes wherever they go. WBC will probably go to maybe Ryan, or at least a title shot. Maybe Teofimo Lopez at Top Rank. It just depends. It just depends. But I think for somebody like Andy Cruz, I think I'd be optimistic if I were him and his team and Matchroom Boxing, because I think within maybe even four fights, but at least within five, he probably should be in a title shot. Because Lomachenko got a title shot, what? Like within, was it two fights? I mean, look at that. I know. I think Lomachenko's pedigree was a lot more, I think. But that's why Lomachenko got a title shot in two fights. Andy Cruz, that's why I say five. Double it up a little bit. So within five fights, I think there's a good chance he gets a title shot. Right?
And I think he's, you know, talented enough to do it, but I just think that they may want to build him because, say, for example, Devin still has the titles. They're going to lose a lot of money just sticking him in there against Devin, I think, because I don't think the British or the American audience are going to really want to pay pay-per-view to watch Andy Cruz. He's a relative unknown, right? Apart from if you're a boxing hardcore. So I'd imagine they'd want to maybe build him up a little bit and then throw him in there. But I don't know. Maybe they'll just back their man, you know, and throw him in there and think that we'll recuperate that money later down the line when he's world champion. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they go about building him.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm very interested to see because, I mean, like, we know. Was Lomachenko maybe the last one that we saw on a pathway like this straight into the pros? Or who would you say?
Yeah, I mean, he's the only one I can remember coming in and doing it that quickly.
That's why this is so intriguing because this is very, very rare and it's very, very interesting for the sport. Like, cause you don't see these guys. These are those types of like guys, like when they talk about like drafts in other sports, like the NBA or, you know, baseball and stuff like that here in the United States, and the number one draft pick or number two draft pick in the whole system is like, oh, we're going to get this guy from this college or from this high school or from this school or this country or something. Like the guy who was just drafted in the NBA here in the United States, he's from France. Victor Wembanyama, I think. He's like 7'2", but he was number one overall. There's a ton of hype around him. There always is around, especially basketball. But that's how I kind of look at Cruz, even though, you know, it's not really like the same level in terms of getting the most attention as like these other mainstream sports like NFL, baseball, and stuff like that, football. But this is as close as we're going to get, right? Like Andy Cruz being a Cuban, was he an Olympian too, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was a Cuban Olympian. And then he has the, right. And then he has the amateur pedigree. I mean, am I wrong by saying that this is like as close as boxing gets in terms of like a high draft pick in comparison to other sports for somebody like Andy Cruz?
Yeah, 100%. It's kind of like the only breeding ground that you have, right? Is probably the amateurs, you know. The Olympics is pretty much the only breeding ground. And yeah, the only guys I can think of is obviously like Andy Cruz, Lomachenko, and then obviously Robizy Ramirez, who, you know, turned pro and actually took a loss on his debut, but eventually kind of rebuilt under Salas. And then, you know, now he's the WBO title holder. But he took a little bit of a step back to take a leap forward.
Also on the card, Jermaine Franklin, 22-2, gets the unanimous decision win over 10 rounds against Isaac Munoz Gutierrez, who takes the first loss of his career. I think he's now 17-1-1. What did you think about Franklin's performance and unanimous decision?
I honestly thought for the longest time during the fight he was going to get the stoppage because he was teeing off on Munoz. And, you know, the commentators kept talking about, you know, trying to stop it and stuff like that. But Munoz just kind of bit down and took it. You know, both of them got a little bit fatigued towards the end. But Franklin, at times, especially at the beginning, I thought he looked pretty quick. I thought his counters were good. Some of the shots where he kind of like leaped in were pretty good. Just couldn't really get Munoz out of there. He had an unbelievable chin. And he actually looked like he was a pretty good boxer at times. Yeah, I think he just needs to have a better camp, lose a little bit of weight. Because some of the things that he did, you could see like, okay, this guy can actually box a little bit. And even Eddie Hearn at the end was impressed by both of them. And I think he actually spoke about using, you know, Munoz again. And he said that he would speak to Franklin about maybe coming to Matchroom for a few fights. But he said he thought Top Rank should really use Franklin against big Jared Anderson as a bit of a measuring stick, which I thought, yeah, it's a pretty good fight, actually. So, but yeah, I thought the fight was pretty good. Just unfortunate that Franklin couldn't get to get the stoppage to kind of like put the cherry on top of the cake.
Franklin's been on our show, hasn't he?
No, we spoke about coming on. Actually, I'm hopefully trying to get him to talk about White against Joshua.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's what I remember. We were in contact with him to try to get on, but he actually wasn't on. That's why I was confused. But yeah, I mean, you got to give it to Top Rank too. They let him go to Matchroom, and you know, as much shit as Bob Arum talks about Eddie Hearn, like, you know, he let Franklin go over there and get a fight, and kind of keep active and stuff like that. So that's promising, but I mean, we'll see. So he still has a long-term deal, or I don't want to say long, but he has some type of multi-fight deal with Top Rank, right? They just let him go over to Matchroom for this fight.
He's with Dimitri Salita.
Oh, okay.
But I think he had a couple of fight deal with Matchroom because he fought White and then AJ. But I believe that contract is now up. But Eddie was saying that he's going to speak with Salita and Franklin and look at maybe using him for some others. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of a little bit of a hot prospect, right? Going in with AJ and White, going 12 rounds with both of them. So I'm sure he's going to get plenty of offers.
Talking about Eddie Hearn, I think it's so funny that, you know, he obviously gets the most slack out of all the promoters in terms of getting shit from other promoters, De La Hoya, Bob Arum, PBC. It's so funny because you hear about when you talk to Bob Arum, when you talk to De La Hoya, when you talk about, you know, PBC guys or something, when you ask them like, oh, okay, what's next for so-and-so fighter who's under the PBC banner, under the Golden Boy banner, under the Matt Top Rank banner, you know, if you give them a name that's outside of their stable, they're like, they'll address it, but they'll be like, oh no, well, we're looking at this guy, you know, and they're going to mention a name that's within their stable. Whereas Eddie Hearn will, and he, I mean, he's good at promoting. Like, sometimes I think he just does it just to stir the pot, but like, he'll throw a name in there that's not even under his banner or DAZN. He'll be like, oh yeah, we're looking at this. Like, you know, we're going to see if maybe this fight's available. Like, maybe the Davis fight is available for, you know, whatever or something like that. Eddie Hearn, I think, does that more than any promoters. And I think, if I had to speculate, these other major promoters get upset about that they're talking about, that Eddie Hearn is talking about their fighters. So they're just like, hey, you know, leave us at, you know, we're not, you can't just say like, oh yeah, we're going to try to make a deal with so-and-so to try to fight so-and-so at who's with Top Rank or Golden Boy. And I think these other promoters get upset at him and they're like, hey, stay on your side. You're talking about our fighters, you know? But I just think it's so interesting to see, like, to sit back and watch. But I think Eddie Hearn just does it also to stir the pot. But I think he also does it to get traction on, you know, boxing media. People say like, oh, Eddie Hearn, an interview where they put a headline, Eddie Hearn says, you know, Charlo is next for Josh Kelly or something like that. You know, it kind of, it gets people to start reporting on it. And then people start commenting, that's never going to happen. Like, well, yeah, I mean, it's likely not going to happen, but I mean, I don't want to say, do you think, I'm pretty sure we know the answer, you know the answer, but do you think Eddie Hearn does stuff like that? He mentions other fighters from other promoters and other networks for his fighters after wins, in order to not only stir the pot, but to try to capitalize on the publicity to associate his fighter's name with another fighter's name?
100%.
Yeah. I just think it's funny, man. He does that. But it's smart, man. Like, you know, that's what you're paying somebody for, is to, you know, to make you seem like you're more than you are. And hopefully you reach that plateau. Moving on, also this past weekend from the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas, Nevada, on Showtime, Frank Martin remains undefeated at 18-0 with a 12-round unanimous decision win. It was a difficult 12-round unanimous decision win over, I think he's the Armenian Artem Haratourian. I know I said that wrong. Who takes the first loss of his career. Martin won by scores of 115, 112 twice, and 114, 113. You know, Martin had to dig deep, but I think these guys that you don't know, they don't have too much name recognition. A lot of their fights are like in other countries or Europe or something, and you don't, you know, there's not too much tape or anything on them. You just don't really know too much about them. It's 50-50, right? Sometimes you don't know, like, they could not be that good, and sometimes they could be pretty decent. You're just like, oh man, this guy's way better than I thought. And I think this is what happened with Frank Martin. He was a 50-50 shot, and he got a guy that was better than people thought, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, Artem didn't have that name recognition, but he was a good opponent, and his style just would kind of left Martin like kind of confused at times, I think, because of his movement. You know, he had good head movement, which kind of made Martin kind of freeze because he wasn't like confident in throwing. I think, you know, once he'd thrown a few times and, you know, he was kind of hitting fresh air, that he was kind of like reluctant to kind of throw a little bit more. But then, you know, when he did get aggressive, he had, I think, three big rounds where he landed a lot, which kind of like made the punch stats, you know, heavily in his favor. But yeah, he kind of showed a little bit of, kind of like a glimpse into what Martin struggles with now, because I think maybe we'd all been a little bit, because he's in Derek James's gym, you know, which has like Ryan Garcia, AJ, Spence, you know, and the Charlos, that as soon as he, you know, started to do well, we were just like, oh, okay, you know, another amazing prospect coming out of that gym. And I think maybe we were a little bit high on him. Or maybe this was just a bad matchup, you know, maybe this was just a bad, you know, choice of styles, and maybe I'm being a little bit low on him. So, you know, now I think he's actually official for one of Devin Haney's championships. So, you know, we'll go from there, I guess. But I think, you know, looking at this, I would favor Devin Haney going into that fight with Frank Martin, because, you know, Haney is a little bit of a mover, kind of like boxes from the outside. And I think, you know, Martin would struggle with that.
How, before I touch on Artem again, especially the whole, I know our former champ Andre Berto tweeted something about that Artem was clapping for the decision, but then he was saying he didn't agree with it. And then people were like saying, oh, why is he clapping? He doesn't agree. But we'll touch on that in a second. But you mentioned Haney for Frank Martin, that Martin's now like in position to get a title shot. How likely do you think, because based off of Haney's previous relationship with Matchroom and Eddie Hearn and DAZN, how likely do you think that Haney would go back to DAZN and Eddie Hearn and give Frank Martin a shot?
Well, the problem you have there, if he goes back to DAZN, obviously Frank Martin's PBC, right? So Al Haymon doesn't seem to like to work with Eddie.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that.
If he just signs like a one-off fight deal with Frank Martin, Devin being the sort of person that just sells it to the highest bidder. You know, he kind of likes to be flamboyant with all the cash and stuff like that. And, you know, it's a tough spot, you know? So why not? Why not? Just whoever offers you the most money. If you're super confident that you can beat anybody, with the highest bidder, go to the highest bidder.
I think you're right. And I was confused about promotional affiliations, but I think you're right that Haney's like, he's trying to be like somebody like Canelo Alvarez or something in terms of like fighting the best. You got to give him a ton of credit. His last few fights, especially especially going to Kambosis, going over there twice or whatever it was, and Lomachenko and all that stuff. He's fought guys to really get where he's at. And I do believe that Haney's that young and now being undisputed champ at 135, one of the most lucrative divisions in the whole sport. Even though he might move up soon, I think within the next, if he has one more fight at 135, I think that's it. But assuming he stays at 135 for maybe two more fights, maybe. I think Haney's in that mode where he's like going to try to make big fights with competitive matchups from across the ring from him. I really do think so. I do you think he's in that mode now, Devin Haney?
Previously, I would have said no, but the fact that he jumped in there with like Lomachenko, who is always a hard night's work, right? Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe I'm underestimating how confident in the sort of fighter that Devin Haney wants to be. So, yeah. And I say that because I hope that he does that. You know, I hope that he chooses to go in there because it's like they say a lot of the time, you know, the big fights are going to be the big paydays. So if you want the big paydays, you know, get in there with the big fights. And there's that many people in and around, you know, 135 and 140 that you can take an L and you're still going to be able to come back and you'll be able to, you know, fight a Teofimo Lopez, fight a Ryan Garcia, you know, any of those names, fight a Josh Taylor. You know, they're all going to be big paydays, even if you take a loss here or there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, definitely interesting to see where Frank Martin goes, but Haney holds all the cards right now, at least for the titles. But Davis and Ryan Garcia are probably the only ones that are like, oh yeah, we don't need to fight anybody for, especially Davis for sure, but they don't need to fight anybody in terms of belt or anything. It's just like, oh yeah, let's just fight because we already make some money. So I mean, it is what it is. Also on the card, Elvis Rodriguez gets the 7th round TKO over Victor Postol, former champ Victor Postol, who takes the 5th loss of his career. What do you think about this matchup? Postol's still going, man. He's still around.
Good performance from Rodriguez, who kind of just overpowered Postol, to be honest with you. Took a couple of rounds for Elvis to get warmed up, and then he was just too much for the aging Postol, unfortunately. I think if he still wants to be around, I can see that he's going to be, you know, a good level of like gatekeeper to kind of test, you know, whether these guys are good enough for the world stage, because, you know, that was the first time he'd ever been stopped. You know, he'd had 4 losses, but never ever been stopped. So, you know, maybe it's time for Postol to hang it up. But at the same time, who am I to retire him?
Yeah, who are you to retire him, man? Come
exactly,
on.
Exactly, yeah.
Shut your mouth. Moving on to fight previews this upcoming Saturday, the 22nd of July, from Shawnee, Oklahoma. Has there been a fight there?
A hotbed of boxing.
Oklahoma's becoming the new Minnesota. You know, there's random locations getting these fights, man. Hey, they must be giving some big tax breaks or some big business incentives to these promotional companies and all that for them to really go there. I mean, it has to be, right? There's no other reason for that.
That has to be in my eyes, because you've got George Kambosis, an Australian, headlining it against Maxie Hughes, a guy from England.
Yeah.
They're fighting in Shawnee, Oklahoma. So yeah, I'm guessing some sort of site fee, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. And maybe, I don't know. I haven't really paid attention to the attendance for these Oklahoma cards for Top Rank, but maybe these, like, it's just like any city that, like, they know, like, oh, we don't get too much sports here. Like, it's a fight. Let's go check it out. So maybe their attendance is actually pretty decent. You know, the citizens or the residents of Oklahoma show up and they watch. Maybe that's it. But like you said, George Kambosis, 20-2, goes up against Maxie Hughes, 26-5-2, is for the IBO lightweight title of the world. IBO making a return. We had the president of the IBO on a couple of years ago. We're going to get him back. Get him to update us on what's going on with the IBO. What do you think about this matchup? Kambosis versus Hughes for the IBO lightweight title.
I'm honestly torn. You know, originally I thought to myself, I was like, you know what? Like, George Kambosis should come back. You know, bit of redemption, you know, get himself back into the win column against someone like a Maxie Hughes. But Maxie Hughes, he just, he always does better than I think, you know, like he's one of those fighters where I look at it and I think to myself, like, okay, you know, he's going to come unstuck here. And then he just pulls off like some type of like some victory that I just don't expect. So it's kind of like it's an interesting one to look at it because, you know, when he defeated Kid Galahad, did anybody expect that?
No.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the type. No, when he beat Kid Galahad, I was like, okay, you know, Maxi Hughes maybe is actually got something here because that was just he stuck to the game plan, very methodical, managed to grind out, you know, a 12 round decision over him, and I'm like, okay, is he going to do something similar against George Kambosos? George Kambosos kind of comes in, he's very powerful, kind of very straightforward though, comes at you with those sort of attacks. And I don't think he's, you know, like an all-around boxer that's going to come in, you know, with, you know, two or three different game plans. So he's not.
Right.
I might go for the underdog. Yeah, I think I might go for Maxi Hughes to beat him by like a 12-round decision. He just kind of like a Kid Galahad. He just gets a game plan from his coach, sticks to it, and grinds out with victory.
Yeah, I'm in agreement in terms of like saying this is a hard one. And I can't say that you're wrong on the Maxi Hughes pick. But I'm going Kambosos, man. I think, like, especially after the Teofimo win and he got the titles and then he fought Devin Haney twice in Australia, even though he lost, I think Kambosos is dedicated. Like, he's, you know, even though he's had a couple losses, he lost his titles. Like, Kambosos is a dedicated fighter and he's disciplined. He's been on the show before, so we've talked to him, you know, interviews and all that, but I'm going Kambosos on this. I think we're going to split on this. I think I'm going Kambosos, and I think Kambosos wins by decision. I can't say that you're wrong. I think it's an intriguing matchup, but I'm going Kambosos here just based on Kambosos' previous fights and the competition that he's been in with.
Yeah,
I think we're split.
It's an interesting one because he has beaten two kind of boxers before. If you look at like Mickey Bay and Lee Selby, they're more of a boxer, right? You know, than somebody like, say, when he beat Teofimo Lopez, I would count Teofimo Lopez more of a, you know, kind of like a heavy-handed, kind of like counter-puncher. So, you know, he has been in there with people similar to like Maxi Hughes before, but yeah, I don't know. There's something about this one. It just seems tricky to me, and I just keep...
Yeah, it's a hard one. It's a hard one.
Yeah, it should be a good fight, though. It should be a good clash of styles, and... you know, hopefully now we're kind of like touching on fight week. Hopefully we see it, you know, advertised a little bit more.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Also on the card, in the co-main event, Keyshawn Davis, 8-0, goes up against Francisco Patera, 28-3. What do you think about this matchup?
Well, the fact that we just had Andy Cruz, you know, last week, somebody obviously that was going back and forth with those kind of like Eddie Hearn on social media, you know, Keyshawn Davis, I think he's going to want to go in there. He's going to put on a good performance. So I think Keyshawn actually stops him. You know, Patera's not really been in there with anybody of note. I think the only name that listeners would know would be Lewis Ritson, where he got a split decision over him back in 2018. And I think he's going to take his first stoppage loss. He's had three losses, but never been stopped. But I think Keyshawn Davis stops him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Davis is... just a better overall fighter, and he will stop him. I'd be surprised if he doesn't stop him. If it goes to the card, then I'd be very surprised about that. And I'll round it off that card. Former guest on the show, Giovanni Santillan, 30-0. Undefeated, 30-0, goes up against Eric Bone, 27-6. What do you think about this matchup?
Eric Bone still going, you know, been in there.
Still going, huh? That's exactly what I was going to say.
Been in there with the likes of, like, Sergi Lipinets, Miguel Vasquez, Chris Algieri, all the way back in 2015. Good opponent, I guess, for Santillan, because he can say that he's got him on his record. And, you know, the guy's been in there with the likes of Chris Algieri. But I think I say it every time, you know, when's Santillan going to get his shot? You know, he's going to be like, I think he wins this fight and he'll be 31-0. And he's still waiting for his shot at the big time. And I think it's obviously just, you know, unfortunate. He's at 147-pound weight category, and those titles, unfortunately, are going to be it's going to be at least a rematch, right, between, you know, Spence and Crawford. So there's a year, and then, you know, maybe they'll come vacant then, and then hopefully, you know, Santillan, he was previously ranked very highly with the WBO. maybe he'll get a shot against somebody like friend of the show, Alexis Rocha, you know, later down the line and maybe a
year. That'd be interesting. No. That's an interesting matchup.
Yeah, it'd be a good matchup, a good clash of styles between those two.
Moving on, this also this weekend from Dubai. Dubai Studio City. Is that the arena? In Dubai, James Jazza Dickens, 32-4, goes up against Hector Andres Sosa, 15-2. This is for the IBO featherweight title of the world. IBO having a big weekend this weekend. I think you know, they're like, hey, let's just throw our belts on the same weekend. They're popular this weekend. I think they're the main titles of the weekend, right? What do you think about this matchup?
Should be, I think, a pretty easy victory, to be honest with you, for Jazza Dickens. Hector Andres Sosa not really been in with anybody of note. So unless he's one of those random, you know, South American people that just comes there with knockout power, I think Jazza puts on a good performance and retains his IBO featherweight title. And hopefully Jazza can get some, you know, bigger names, you know, hopefully towards the end of the year.
And then also on the card for the IBO Bantamweight World Championship. IBO, I'm telling you, they're busy. They're busy this weekend. They're making a comeback. Mohamed Wasim, 12-2, goes up against Donnie Nietes. Donnie Nietes, just talk about legend. 43-2-6. What do you think about this matchup?
This could be a decent little fight. You know, I've never been overly impressed with Mohamed Wasim, but he seems to pop up on some of these, you know, like Dubai shows, Saudi Arabia shows. I think if Donnie Nietes has anything left in the tank, I think he becomes the new IBO Bantamweight World Champion.
I wouldn't put it past him, man. You never know. That experience, you know, it's always interesting to see. Like, let's just see what you got. See if you have anything left.
This is 52nd pro fight for Donnie Nietes.
Hey, that's, you know, back in the day, like you look at Canelo, especially Julio Cesar Chavez and all those guys, like, oh, I had all these fights. It was common, but this isn't common anymore. You don't see this very much. And, you know, I don't think you're really going to ever see it a lot anymore anyways. But, yeah, Nietes, I think, is last of a dying breed in terms of a number of fights like this. And also, this upcoming Tuesday, a Japan fight. I think it's so crazy that I wonder why, like, the middle of the week, these fights go on. Maybe you know. Maybe you can explain it right now. In a huge fight, very, very big fight, especially in Japan, but just in terms of a hardcore boxing fan base, this is big. From Tokyo, Japan, Stephen Fulton, 21-0, goes up against the monster, Naoya Inoue, 24-0. This is for the WBC and WBO Super Bantamweight titles of the world. Fulton traveling all the way to Japan for this fight. All right, break it down for me. What do you think?
This is another tricky one, dude. Like, and just for the listeners, this isn't this Tuesday. It's next Tuesday.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Just I wasn't 25th. Too sure.
Sorry. I got excited just because of the fight.
Yeah. I didn't know when we were going to do the show. So I was like, you know what? I'll throw it in. This is because if you think about it, Stephen Fulton, great outside boxer against someone like Inoue, you know, powerful come forward fighter. So it's a great clash of styles, and normally with that Fulton style is the kind of style that you would need to beat somebody like Inoue. Just keep them twisting and turning, don't let them get set and stuff like that. So this is going to be a super intriguing fight. I think it's going to be on ESPN for people. It hasn't been announced, but I believe it's going to be on ESPN for our US listeners. So, you know, hopefully get up early in the morning to watch that. Oh, man, this is a
good fight, man.
I honestly don't know who to pick because it's Inoue by stoppage or Fulton on points. Because it's a sort of fight, you know, like a mini Tyson Fury, kind of like Deontay Wilder, right? Because, you know, Fulton could be schooling him. And then Inoue just connects and lays him out because he's so heavy-handed.
I give a ton of credit to Fulton, man. Especially being under the PBC banner and going over there. That's huge. I give a ton of credit to Fulton, man. Like, this is a fight.
It's actually Fulton's birthday today.
Happy birthday, Stephen Fulton.
Yeah, happy birthday, Stephen Fulton. And,
this is a fight, man. This is definitely going to be in the top maybe three fights of the year, at least as of right now. I mean, I don't know. In terms of, like, you know, skill, competition, all that, you would think, right?
Yeah, I would think so. You know what? I'm going to make a pick. I'm going to go. Fulton. I'm going to go Fulton. I think maybe Inoue's maybe moved up
too much
category too that, far. I think that's what I was thinking too.
But you also got to give him credit for that too. It's like we touched about. We talked about Amanda Serrano earlier. That's trying to make the most out of the female divisions by just going up and down eight weight classes just to kind of create opportunities. Inoue was like, okay, I've cleaned this weight class out. Let me just go up. You know, Canelo does the same thing. You know, it's something. So even if he loses, Inoue will get a will still get a ton of credit because people are going to be like, man, he's been so dominant. Like, you know, everybody has a ceiling in terms of weight. He finally found it, but you got to give him a ton of credit. I think it's this is Fulton's. Like, I think all the pressure is on Fulton's shoulders. He has to win. He has to win. Inoue could, even though there's a, you know, he's such a monster, and he's, especially in Japan, he's so huge. Inoue, I think, can afford to lose, even though he doesn't want to, because, like you said, he's moving up in weight. Fulton, I think he has to win. Their loss isn't even an option.
I think he takes it. I think he kind of just boxes for 12 rounds, wins on points, because I think he's dedicated enough. He seems to always be training. I know people say that he's like a cardio monster. So I think, you know, being alert for 12 rounds, being on it and being able to twist and turn and keep a new way doing it, I think he'll do it. I don't think he's going to be one of those guys, you know, gets to the last few rounds, gets to the championship rounds, kind of fatigues, and then that gives a new way a chance to catch him. I think Fulton's going to not school him. I still think it'll be close, but I think he wins on points. You know, like a 8-4, 7-5 decision victory. But I hope, selfishly, we get a rematch over in the US.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. Either way, this is an excellent fight. In the co-main event, Robizy Ramirez, who we touched on earlier, 12-1, goes up against Satoshi Shimizu, 11-1. This is for the WBO featherweight championship of the world. What do you think about this matchup?
Honestly, I don't know too much about Shatuzi, but every time you see like somebody from Japan step up to the world level, they never really get blown out. They have like a very good feeder system, it seems, in Japan, where they're always super freaking tough. So I don't think Ramirez is going to go in there and like blow him over, but I think Ramirez will probably win. Just because of it, you know, the pedigree that he's got, you know, and I actually didn't even realize that the guy had flown out there to do this card until I wrote the show notes. We kind of flown under the radar, unfortunately.
Right.
I think it'll be a good fight. I think it'll be a tough fight, but I put Ramirez to. I think that'll go points as well, because I think most of the Japanese fighters that you see in world titles never get smoked. I think they're always super, super tough and just keep coming. So I think that goes points as well. Points for Fulton, points for Ramirez.
Yeah. It's a good matchup. The Japanese fighters can fight. Yeah, I like this card, man. And we overlooked it, but why do you think, maybe you know it because I don't, why do you think these fights happen in the middle of the week like this?
I don't know.
Is that their weekend or something, or what's going on here?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, maybe... You know, when it's on ESPN, maybe they'll explain to us why. Because, I'm not too sure why they always do it. Because if you think about it, it's even with the time difference, it's midweek. It's not like it's, you know, like it's a Saturday into a Sunday. The time difference makes it, you know, still midweek. So it's kind of interesting why they do that.
I think this is a point in the show of this week's episode where we should clip this specific timestamp. Post it on Twitter and ask the Twitter followers at the last round 12 on Twitter what they think. Because maybe they have answers. Maybe somebody out there knows. In the boxing sphere, don't mention it. I'm thinking about clipping this and we can post it. But I'm sure there's a reason. But hopefully we'll let people chime in, see if they can figure it out. Moving on to news and notes section of the last round podcast, this week's episode. Teofimo Lopez, are you surprised? Unretires. I wouldn't even call it a retirement. As he was pressured by the WBO president to tell him in writing, hey, I'm relinquishing my title. I'm retired. Teofimo Lopez, you know, I don't think anybody believed it. I think he was just saying it just to kind of maybe even a mental health thing to make himself, you know, kind of stir the pot in boxing. But he said he's going to keep the title, and then he calls out Devin Haney. Do I want to ask if you're surprised? I mean, I don't think anybody believed it from the get-go, right? Even Top Rank, they were just like, oh, yeah, he's just playing around.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody truly believed it, right? We just hope that with all the troubles that he's had, that, you know, if he's coming back, you know, hopefully he doesn't come back too quickly until all of those things, you know, away from the ring are kind of sorted. I think, we touched on this last time. You know, I think we thought he was hopefully going to be out for quite some time just to try to get those away because, you know, Teofimo's good to watch and stuff like that. It's just kind of like his interviews and the stuff that he posts have kind of changed to be kind of like kind of dark and, you know, argumentative now, whereas before he seemed to be like a happy-going young guy where he could do no wrong and stuff like that, where it's a little bit darker now. He's great to watch, you know, and that performance he put in against Josh Taylor just showed that he's still got it. You know, he asked himself, do I still have it? And fuck right. Yeah, he does. Hell yeah, he does.
Has to keep it consistent, man. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, if he's going to fight, it's towards the end of the year where he gives him some time to sort out, you know, the personal problems he has outside of the ring. And then hopefully we get him in there with some of those, you know, we can dream, get him in there with your Devin Haney's, your Ryan Garcia's, you know, people like that. Maybe even a Gervonta Davis at a catchweight. That'd be a flipping great fight. You know?
Yeah, but that's never going to happen. We're not anytime soon.
Adolf Barboza, you know, he was the one who was supposed to be in there for the title that, you know, he was tentatively going to relinquish, or maybe someone like an Arnold Barboza. But yeah, give me any of those big fights. You know, the Garcia or Devin Haney would be the A-star one that I would like to see next.
And also, within the last couple days or so, Gervonta Davis was released from a Baltimore jail last Friday. The Maryland Department of Public Safety confirmed to ESPN. And then also, Gervonta Davis has been posting online. His trainer, Calvin Ford, posted that he was out and pictures of him. The 28-year-old Davis served 44 days in jail after a judge ruled on June 1st that he violated the terms of his house arrest. I think Davis posted a picture of him in his house or a house with a bunch of cash, you know. He's out. I would assume they're going to try to bring him back before the end of the year. I would assume. I think they are. Would maybe November, I would say. But yeah, I think he tries to come back before the end of the year. And also, we touched on it earlier, and we've been talking about Devin Haney throughout this episode. But Haney was arrested last week in Los Angeles as he was booked on a felony charge of carrying a concealed weapon in a vehicle, according to the LAPD. Haney was released on $35,000 bail. You know, he has his court appearance in LA is scheduled for August 3rd. Bill Haney, Devin Haney's dad, said it's a misunderstanding, and it'll be solved once Devin goes to court. Bill Haney also said that it's unfortunate that he was arrested with his armed licensed security. And then Bill Haney said that he's confident that things will be worked out. So, I mean, who knows? You know, these young guys, I don't know why you have a weapon, concealed weapon in your, you know. It was really unfortunate to hear when that happened, you know. But Haney, he's young, but, you know, I wonder what happens. You know, give him his day in court. Maybe that weapon, or that if it's a gun or whatever it is, maybe it's registered, maybe it's legal or something. But who knows? Who knows? Who knows what happened? But either way, hopefully it's a one-time thing. Hopefully Bill Haney. I would assume Bill Haney's pretty upset with his son, and he's going to talk to him. But you never know. Devin Haney's on a high right now with all of his titles and everything. So we will see. But once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. And like you said, we touched on the monster in a way, Stephen Fulton. That's on July 25th, not this Tuesday, July 25th, which is the week next week. So we want to make sure that's said again. Because I think that was a good point that you added in for this week's episode notes. Because usually we record towards the beginning of the week, and sometimes it's a little bit past the date. And since it's a Tuesday fight, and especially it's like an early morning or whatever in the United States, it's a little different. But once again, guys, thank you again for listening to this week's episode of The Last Round. Before we completely sign off, once again, for this week's episode, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to join us next week. We finally get to preview Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford, for all the crown jewels.
Let's go. I'm ready for that. I am ready for that. We'll try to secure a guest especially for that fight. That's a big fight, so we'll see what we can do. We'll go looking and try to reach out and contact people, contact their teams and stuff. Hopefully we can get a pretty big guest for a pretty big fight like that. So once again, guys, thank you guys for listening to this week's episode of The Last Round Podcast. So for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.